Well,
yes. All right, this is the time and place set for oral argument in the case of John Doe versus Jane Doe, case number 48663. Here on behalf of John Doe, we have Mr. Rule. Here on behalf of Jane Doe, we have Ms. Rady. Are the parties prepared to go forward?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, then with that, we will hear argument from the appellant in this case.
Thank you, Madam Chief Judge. Good morning. May it please the court. This matter comes before this court on appeal from the district court, where the magistrate found that father did not carry his burden to prove that the termination of parental rights of the mother of the party's only child in common was justified. The magistrate denied the father's petition after finding that although father had established a prima facie case of abandonment, that mother had established through substantial and competent evidence that there was just cause that excused her abandonment of the child. The findings of fact and conclusions of law issued by the magistrate notably, however, did not make findings or conclusions about another of father's alleged grounds for termination, and that was neglect. So there are two issues that the appellant brings before this court this morning. The first is a request that this court find that the magistrate's determination that mother established just cause to excuse her abandonment of the child was not supported by substantial competent evidence, which is evidence that a reasonable mind might accept as adequate to support a conclusion. The second issue was that the magistrate, that the trial court, erred in not engaging in a best interest of the child analysis after hearing evidence of a second independent ground for termination, being neglect. The first issue, whether mother sufficiently presented evidence of just cause to excuse her abandonment, I'll take up before this court first. Importantly, this court is tasked with undertaking an independent review of the trial court record, but it may not reweigh the evidence presented there to determine if the clear and convincing standard is met. Rather, this court has to determine whether there exists substantial competent evidence to support the trial court's findings. Just cause, as it relates to abandonment in a termination case, both this court and the Idaho Supreme Court have long identified that just cause can be established by presenting evidence of physical, financial, or logistical barriers that excuse a parent's abandonment of their child. In other cases, this court and the Supreme Court have found that physical distance between the parent and the child is a logistical barrier that can excuse abandonment. The young age of a child can sometimes render one of the parent's attempts to contact that child in writing or with gifts basically meaningless, because if they can't read the writings or understand that the gifts came from a distant parent, sometimes the tender age of the child can establish just cause to excuse the abandonment. Sometimes military service can establish just cause. In other cases, evidence of an unusually hostile relationship between mother and father can sometimes be one of the logistical barriers that establishes just cause. Here, however, none of those factors that this court and the Supreme Court have previously identified as just cause are present. Rather, the magistrate, in her findings of fact and conclusions of law, determined that mother had established basically four areas of just cause that excused her abandonment of the child. The first was that mother had lost her phone sometime in late 2018. The trial court recognized it was undisputed that mother last saw the child in August of 2017. Now, mother said that the loss of her phone in late 2018 was her only access to father's phone number, and that she didn't have access to reach father's phone number through any other way. Notably and importantly, father's phone number has remained the same since 2011. So this is not an issue where dad changed his number and mom couldn't get a hold of him for that reason. After mother's loss of her phone, which she contended was a logistical barrier that excused her abandonment, and the trial court agreed. However, it's important to note that the Supreme Court has previously specifically stated that evidence of just cause to excuse abandonment must be relevant to the period of abandonment. And in a case where that's primarily discussed, the court looked at evidence of just cause that was put forth by a father who had lived out of state and had had some legal trouble and had tried to present evidence that he had some logistical and financial barriers that prevented him from visiting or contacting his child for a period of a couple months. But the court recognized that the relevant period of abandonment was over 2 years. And thus found that because dad had a few logistical barriers that may have legitimately prevented him from contacting the child for a couple months, the large span that made up the period of abandonment was so great that those few little barriers and hurdles that dad had for a couple months were not sufficient to establish just cause. So as that applies to this case, even after mother lost her phone in 2018, she could have contacted father through his counsel after he filed the petition seeking to terminate her parental rights. She then had telephone contact information where she could have very reliably communicated with father through his counsel. And his counsel made an appearance and filed the termination petition in April of 2020, which means that if we're looking at the relevant period of abandonment between the last time that mother saw the child or communicated with the child in any way, in August of 2017, and the trial of the matter, which was held earlier this year, we're looking at a 45-month span.
Mr. Roll.
Yes, Your Honor.
My understanding is that there was a telephone call in, I assume it's May 2018, Mother's Day 2018. Does that not count for purposes of contact within a 1 year period of time?
Well, it may, had the mother not made that call in a belligerent fashion at approximately 10 o'clock at night, and which was not a reasonable effort to contact the child. Although there's no evidence to support his allegation, father contended that mother sounded perhaps inebriated and that her attempt in that way to contact the child was not a legitimate attempt at contact. And it was only 5 or 6 months later that she then lost her phone and claimed she couldn't contact the child at all. But out of the 45 months between August of 2017 and the termination trial, the loss of the phone issue contributed to only 14 or 15 of those months, a third of the relevant period of abandonment. And that's just for the phone contact issue. Other evidence of just cause that was put forth by mother and that the trial court found persuasive was that mother didn't contact father or child at the address where the three of them had lived together in 2015 and early 2016 out of some vague fear that her presence there might be disturbing and cause law enforcement to respond and that that would somehow be negative for her. And the reason that that evidence is not substantial and competent evidence that supports just cause is because it's purely speculative and hypothetical. There was no actual evidence that mother's legal rights would be in jeopardy by simply walking less than a mile from her current residence at her grandmother's house to the apartment where she had previously lived with father and child, and just knocked on the door to see who responded.
Does that mean that you are, there's no evidence to support the magistrate court's finding that the mother was told that they did not live there any longer and threatened to call the police if she ever came there again?
Well, there's not no evidence to support that finding, but that evidence was directly contradicted by the testimony of father's mother, and not on rebuttal either. So there's not no evidence about that, but there's conflicting evidence in the very least.
But wasn't the court's finding that that happened?
Yes. Yes, the court determined that father's mother had previously told mother that father and child no longer lived there and that she would call law enforcement if she came back.
So isn't that more than a vague fear on mother's part?
Well, I guess the way that I see it as a hypothetical is because she didn't try anything else after that. She could have gone out of her way to ask law enforcement or any number of state agencies like Child Assistive Services or her counsel to reach out for her. She never even tried to make another attempt. And even with the information that she got from father's mother, again, that's one day out of 45 months, which is the relevant period of abandonment. And again,
what do you mean when you say it's one day?
I mean that she tried once on one occasion to vaguely possibly contact her child, and that she never tried again after that. So on one occasion out of 45 months of abandonment, that's not just cause that's relevant to the entire period of abandonment.
But your argument is that she had to try some other means, or is your argument that she had to disregard the threat and try and go in person?
Well, I guess my argument is twofold. Number one, she could have ascertained whether the threat was reasonable or realistic. And yes, she could have explored some other avenue to at least attempt to contact her child through counsel, through law enforcement, through father's counsel, once she was aware of the petition. Any of those other means would have been a realistic way of at least trying to contact her child, which she failed to do entirely, except for this one occasion out of nearly 4 years of abandonment. And for that reason, these sporadic and isolated instances do not substantially and competently constitute evidence of just cause.
You mentioned that hostile relationships has been a basis for just cause. And so what are the distinguishing characteristics between the hostile relationships that have been just cause and what appears to be a hostile relationship in this case?
Well, I think the distinguishing factor is that the relationship in this case between mother and father is not a hostile relationship. It's a non-existent relationship.
What about between mother and father's parents, where the child lived and where the relative to the threat that was made that police would be called?
Again, a practically non-existent relationship. She's seen them twice in 4 years, once on purpose and once just in public by chance. The parties don't have a long history of combative and hostile interactions with each other. They have a long history of no interactions with each other. Father doesn't have hostility or anger or resentment toward mother that motivates his petition. Rather, his petition is motivated by concern for the best interests of the child. So I guess that's what I would couch as the distinguishing characteristic is the relationship here isn't hostile, it's non-existent.
Counsel, mother was aware of the paternity action, isn't that true?
Yes, I believe her testimony was that she didn't know how or didn't know when to respond.
I think her testimony was that she didn't see the modification request until after she was released from her second period of incarceration. But she could have, would there have been a barrier for mother to reach out and contact father in some way through that action?
I can't see a legitimate barrier there. Father filed the pleadings. His contact information was on the pleadings. Once he was represented by counsel in the termination action, that's a form, a means of contacting father. Mother, even after the default orders were entered against her, and if she legitimately didn't know, she could have filed a motion to set aside. She could have filed a petition to modify. She could have, and that those are free services that were available to her through legal aid and other means. So I don't think that constitutes a financial barrier. There were avenues that she could have explored, and she simply didn't. She didn't even try them. And so the few sporadic and isolated things she did do, because they're not substantial and they're not relevant to the entire period of abandonment, which again is approximately 45 months, they simply do not constitute evidence of legitimate just cause to excuse her obvious willful abandonment of her child.
I have one more question, counsel. I just want to make sure that I'm correct in reading the magistrate's determination that the periods of incarceration, the three periods of incarceration that mother went through, were not determined to be relevant to the just cause determination. Is that accurate?
That's my reading as well, Your Honor, that those periods of incarceration were noted, but that they were not identified as evidence of just cause.
Thank you.
I see that I'm about 130 seconds over, so I'll conclude there and have that time deducted from the second half. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Roll. Ms. Rady, any response? You're muted.
Good morning, Chief Judge and fellow judges, and may it please the court. I will keep this as brief as possible. Mr. Roll has, as he has pointed out, this court does conduct an independent review but does not reweigh the evidence. The judge, the magistrate in this case, laid out her findings and her thoughts quite clearly. She did believe that the loss of the phone combined with father's blocking of mother on Facebook and other social media and the resistance by his parents to even relay a phone number, that's all the respondent had asked them to do, was relay her phone number to the appellant so that they could try to make contact, was just cause for her failure to maintain a normal parental relationship. Significantly, she was incarcerated, and the judge did not point that out as a reason for just cause. However, when you combine all of that, I think it's very clear that the judge properly found that she had no way. I think it's important to note that in this day and time, I don't know how many of us would actually remember most people's phone numbers due to our smartphone addictions, I guess. I don't know my children's phone numbers. I know my husband's phone number. That's it. The respondent did testify that when she, that she had substantial fear and belief that mother would, that the appellate's mother would call the police on her, and she's on felony probation. She does not want any hassles. She had been told that they no longer lived at that address. If she believed appellant's mother that they no longer lived at that address, she would have no reason to go back to that address. Mr. Roll does point out that mother has failed to try to contact father through, even through him, since the filing of this petition. That is not completely accurate. However, counsel and I had exchanged a series of emails in which my client had relayed to counsel that she was willing to stipulate to some kind of phase plan and, quote, jump through hoops, whatever hoops the appellant wanted her to jump through in order to reintegrate with her child. That was prior to the trial in this matter back in December, I believe.
Ms. Rady?
Yes.
Do you have a position on when the 12-month period by which we measure the abandonment runs? Does it run from August 2017 when she last had contact? Does it run from the filing 12 months prior to the filing of the petition? Do you have a position on when that 12-month period is determined?
I would believe that you have to go back and look at the matter at, on a whole, going back to August 7th of 2017, which is what I believe the judge, the magistrate in this case did as well. My client in her testimony very clearly states that she realizes that from 2017 until the time that she went to prison in January of 2019, that she was in a bad place, that she was battling drug addiction, that she was not doing what she should have. She did have two periods of incarceration prior to that, one of which is when the appellant pursued the modification that was defaulted, that my client maintains she did not receive notice of until she received, until she was out of jail from that period of incarceration. She is not legally savvy. She did not realize what she could do.
But if we measure then, if we measure then the period of abandonment from the time, as you suggest, from August 2017 to August 2018, at best, there are two potential telephone calls, depending on the evidence, one on Mother's Day at 10:30 at night, and maybe one on the child's birthday. What is your position on whether or not that establishes reasonable attempts in that time frame to show just cause for the abandonment?
I believe part of that time she was incarcerated, I believe that it was from August 2017 until October, late October of 2017, and then again in early 2018, I believe she was incarcerated. And she did not have father's phone number. She had no way to try to contact him at that point from jail, which would take up approximately 6 months, if I'm not mistaken. The other 6 months, the attempts that she did make, the Mother's Day probably was not her finest moment, but I believe at the point that appellate actually answered the phone, she had testified that she had attempted to call him probably 30 times that day.
Thank you.
As far as Mr. Roll's argument for neglect, the court did mention that in their findings of facts and conclusion of the law that he had, that father had pled neglect in his initial petition, and Mr. Roll did mention it twice during his opening statement at trial, but after that point, he did not make any further mention of neglect, including in his closing arguments. He states that he presented clear evidence. The court, however, the magistrate below, mentions that neglect was pled, but that the majority of the evidence focused on abandonment, and she does not address the neglect analysis because the ground has to be supported by clear and convincing evidence. When I reread the trial transcript, I struggled to find clear and convincing evidence that mother had neglected the child. I think that opposing counsel did not clearly lay out that argument for the court. I don't know that, of course, I can't speak for the court, but alleging that my client missed two or three doctor's appointments when the child was an infant is substantial, clear and convincing evidence that she was neglecting the child. Further, if he failed to make the argument down below, he should not have a second bite of the apple here, which is what I feel he's trying to do. There was conflicting testimony as far as my client's ability and her actually taking care of the child in the medical necessities, the significant medical necessities that this child had as an infant. My client testified that she had to cluster feed the infant. I believe appellant testified that that respondent had taken the child to almost all of the doctor's appointments when he was a newborn. The child had significant gastrointestinal issues, and there is conflicting testimony that appellant was told that she had missed, I believe he stated, two appointments. My client testified that she had taken him to the appointments. The judge, the magistrate, is the one that is in the unique position to determine. Excuse me, I'm a little bit nervous. This is my first go around with this. There was conflicting testimony, and the judge below is in the unique position to observe the witnesses during that testimony. And that was true throughout the case. Mr. Roll stated that appellant's mother had testified that father's mother had testified that they hadn't run into each other, but that was father's father. Father himself testified that his parents did run into Ashley and she asked him. So father and father's father had the contradictory testimony. Father's testimony actually backed up mother's testimony. So if the judge gave a little more weight to the mother in determining some of these issues, I would have to argue that it is because father and father's father, who also testified, contradicted each other on several occasions in their testimony.
Counsel, I have a question. In the definition of abandonment, it states that where a parent has willfully failed to maintain a normal parental relationship, including but not limited to reasonable support or, it's in the disjunctive, regular personal contact. My question is, as far as I could tell from the record, the only support mother offered was when she contacted health and welfare in February of 2020 to have some wages garnished. Was there any other support that mother gave to the child at any time before that in 2020?
No, Your Honor, but I would point out that I believe that that child support stems from the, I believe it was late December order that she had defaulted on. And on January 1st of 2019, she was incarcerated until November of 2019. That's when she completed her writer program. So those arrears were building up during that time. I don't believe, at least I have not seen any evidence previous to the defaulted judgment for custody establishing child support. So she was incarcerated almost during the entire period in which support was ordered. And then as soon as she was out, she got out in late November of 2019, she got a job. And as soon as she got a job and made sure that that job was going to be stable, she contacted child support to establish some way to make payments on that and get income withholding started. She could have requested that the child support be stayed while she was in prison, but she did not do that.
So I take it there is no evidence of any other effort to provide support to the child before that time period in 2020 when she contacted the Department of Health and Welfare.
Correct. From the time of August 2017, I believe prior to that, she was equally contributing her and the petitioner were sharing parental responsibilities. August 2017, she went to jail for the first time until late October 2017. When she was released, I don't believe she had paid any support to the child after that or provided any other support. And then the period of incarceration in 2018 was her release was brief, and I don't believe she had provided any support during that time.
Thank you.
Finally, I would just state that the judge did not fail to conduct a best interest of the child evaluation because she did not reach that question. The best interest of the child evaluation comes after the petitioner establishes a clear ground for termination. And while the petitioner did establish a prima facie case, the judge below did find that that there was just cause, and therefore the petitioner did not meet his full burden of proof on the abandonment issue. And finally, one can only, again, I would argue that the petitioner did not make a strong case for neglect. He failed to make the arguments highlighting for the court the reasons to establish neglect. And because of that, the judge did not do the neglect analysis and therefore had no reason to commit or to perform a best interest of the child evaluation on the grounds of neglect.
Thank you, Ms. Rady. Mr. Roll, any reply?
Yes, thank you. I'll begin with what I identified as the second issue, which is neglect. While it's probably literally true that a majority of the testimonial evidence presented at the trial was focused on the elements of abandonment, there were very clear and intentional aspects of Father's testimony that directly related to neglect. And as the record notes and Ms. Rady notes, neglect was pled as a separate ground for termination and was identified as a separate ground for termination twice in my opening statement at trial. And then I specifically asked Father about all the various grounds for neglect, which are sometimes broad and could admittedly bleed in between the grounds for abandonment and neglect, because neglect, for instance, includes evidence that the parent failed to provide proper parental care and control. And some of the evidence of that failure can sound like evidence of abandonment. However, Father at trial went on for more than 5 pages of testimony discussing very specifically mother's failure to provide medical attention and care, mother's failure to provide other proper and necessary attention and control and care, especially since she moved out and left father and child when the child was approximately 6 months old and never rejoined them. I'm not sure exactly where the idea that mother and father were equally contributing to the child's welfare until her incarceration in August 2017 came from, because that's not in evidence before the trial court nor this court. In fact, there's contradictory evidence from the father, who went on and on about the changes that he eventually had to make to his school and work schedule and the child care that was provided by father's parents, because mother was not providing proper care and control for the child, much less equal divisions of proper care and control. And so some of that evidence, if you were to hear it, you might tend to think that relates only to abandonment, but we very specifically addressed the lack of care and control, and especially the lack of care and control as it relates to the child's medical care during his infancy. We did that intentionally and specifically because we know that that's a separate and distinct ground for termination under the definition of neglect in Idaho Code Section 16-2002. That wasn't an accidental presentation of medical neglect testimony. Father went on for 5 pages about that, which was sufficient to establish an independent ground for termination. Once that ground is established, the trial court must engage in a best interest analysis. The best interest analysis doesn't only follow evidence of abandonment. Any ground for termination, once it's been established, must be followed by a best interest analysis. Notably, the court, in its findings of fact and conclusion of law, does not say, well, there was some evidence of neglect, but I didn't find that it was sufficient evidence to constitute an independent ground, and so I didn't engage in the best interest analysis. The findings of fact and conclusions of law are silent entirely as to the independent ground of neglect, which leads me to believe the court didn't consider it at all. If the court had considered it and determined that the evidence of neglect was simply insufficient, it would have said so. The findings of fact and conclusions of law were lengthy and specific and thorough. If the court had recognized neglect properly as an independent ground, it would have said so. And it didn't, which leads me to conclude that the magistrate forgot or simply failed to recognize the testimony that was on point and sufficiently tie it to the neglect. But in either case, the error in not conducting a subsequent best interest analysis, it is clear error by the trial court. And on that issue, what we're asking this court to do is remand with instructions for the trial court to engage in the necessary best interest analysis. I'll return now to some of the issues of abandonment. to clear up not whether abandonment was established, because this court doesn't have the authority to revisit that issue, but instead to demonstrate through some of the facts that did establish abandonment that the alleged just cause for abandonment was not supported by substantial and competent evidence, nor did it relate to the entire period of abandonment. To boil it down to its most basic form, what was the just cause? Mother lost her phone in the winter of 2018. So she couldn't contact father over the phone. Mother couldn't contact father through Facebook only. I believe Ms. Rady may have accidentally said through Facebook and other social media. There's not evidence in the record of the trial court that that's accurate. Facebook was the only social media account that through which father and mother could not communicate.
Why was that?
Father openly admitted that in the days and weeks after their separation, when there was still some tension and uncomfortability, he felt that communication through that avenue was not helpful, nor was it appropriate. Because as I'm sure this court has experienced in other cases, written communication on social media between parents who are going through relationship difficulties is generally not helpful. And father recognized that that had become an avenue for aggression and threats and harsh communication. And so he thought it best, both for him and for the child, to just cut off that one means of communication. But
did he suggest an alternative means?
Well, she knew where they lived, and she knew his phone number, and she knew his parents and family. And even after she moved out of the Opahanga apartment, she lived less than a mile away and could have contacted them by mail or in person at any time. And she's, for the entire period, even now, she has failed to do that. Not one letter, not one card, not one gift, not one knock at the door since approximately the middle of 2018. Not contact through me. Ms. Rady indicated that she had offered maybe to jump through some hoops. That's a settlement communication under 408. That's not an attempt by a mother to contact their child. That's completely different. Mother did not, through counsel, say, hey, would you be willing to set up some supervised visitation, or can we meet at a public park, or can we have none of that. That was strictly a settlement communication, an offer of a compromise negotiation. That's not an attempt to contact your child. Not by email, not by letters, not even, well, I sent letters to the Opahanga address, which was the last known address, even if they had moved. She could have sent a letter and had it returned in the mail. At least then she would have known. And she didn't do that. Oh, by the way, she knew for certain in September of 2019 that father and child still lived at that same apartment, because that's when the social investigation report was done. And the person who conducted that report told her that they still lived there. The person who conducted that investigation report also told mother at that time in the fall of 2019, when she was conducting her interviews with the parties, that father still had the same phone number. Still no call, still no letter, still no knock at the door, not even with involvement of law enforcement or counsel or social services or the Department of Health and Welfare or something. Nothing at all for years. And because of all those facts, because this was such a long-standing history of abandonment, long, long periods, more than one-year period of continuous non-contact, that's how little and how sporadic the contact was. Because of all those facts, which helped to support the abandonment allegation, the very few and frankly inconsequential attempts by mother, which were sporadic and not meaningful, they cannot be substantial competent evidence of just cause to adequately excuse her near total failure to contact her child for going on 4 years now. To be sure, terminating one's parental rights is probably one of the most serious things that we ask our courts to do. That's why the hurdles for proving the grounds that support termination are so high, because it's a serious matter. In this case, father provided sufficient evidence of abandonment, indisputable. Provided sufficient evidence of a second independent ground for termination, which is neglect. He specifically gave pages worth of testimony about that after mentioning it and priming the trial court to hear that evidence by mentioning it twice in the opening argument. And still that evidence was disregarded and the best interest analysis was not engaged in, which was clear error. It was also clearly erroneous, meaning that there was not substantial competent evidence, which is evidence that a reasonable mind considers adequate to support a conclusion, that mother had established just cause for her failure to maintain a normal parental relationship with the child, her willful failure. Loss of the phone for approximately one third of the abandonment period is not substantial and competent evidence of just cause. One means of communication being cut off, that is Facebook, cannot establish just cause. Even after the Facebook cutoff, she still had the phone number. They grew up together. They've been friends since they were 13 years old. Surely they knew some people in common in the community that could have put her in touch with father had she actually tried or asked. So the Facebook avenue cutoff is basically meaningless. She knew as early as fall of 2019 that dad and child still lived at the same apartment where she resided with them and still made no effort not to send anything through the mail, even if she was afraid to show up in person, even if she found that threat credible and reasonable and didn't want to involve law enforcement, even on her behalf. Still, she sent no letter, no card, no gift, no support, nothing. And by that time, the fall of 2019, the child was over 4 years old. And surely a four-year-old could appreciate the written word much more than an infant, of course, in earlier years. And the last thing I'll note is that the periods of incarceration in cases that have been before this court and the Idaho Supreme Court, incarceration by itself is not a consideration that a parent has absolutely no means or method or possibility of contacting their child. Numerous cases support that. So the incarceration alone cannot establish just cause either, not that the trial court did. Simply.
Thank you, Mr. Roll. I can see that your time has run. We appreciate the arguments and briefing in this case. The case is now fully submitted to the court. The court will issue an opinion in due course. The court will be in recess until August 3rd.
Thank you, Ms. Velasquez.
Thank you.
Hope you're doing okay, Talia. See you again soon.
Thank you for your, and the courts as well, accommodations there. It was quite scary for a short period of time, and I appreciate the congeniality. Thank you.
No problem. Talk to you again soon.